Chapter 81.
The Hawker is on final approach.
Simon Edwards, executive services officer at Biggin Airfield, paced the control tower, squinting nervously at the rain-soaked runway. He never appreciated being awoken early on a Saturday morning, but it was particularly distasteful that he had been called in to oversee the arrest of one of his most lucrative clients. Sir Lee Teabing paid Biggin Hill not only for a private hangar, but a per-landing fee for his frequent arrivals and departures. Usually, the airfield had advance warning of his schedule and was able to follow a strict protocol for his arrival. Teabing liked things just so. The custom Jaguar stretch limousine he kept in his hangar was to be fully gassed, polished, and the day's London Times laid out on the back seat. A customs official was to be waiting for the plane at the hangar to expedite the mandatory documentation and luggage check. Occasionally, customs agents accepted large tips from Teabing in exchange for turning a blind eye to the transport of illegal organics, mostly luxury foods, Dover escargot, a particularly ripe unprocessed Roquefort, certain fruits. The customs laws were absurd anyway, and if Biggin Hill didn't accommodate its clients, certainly competing airfields would. Teabing was provided with what he wanted here at Biggin Hill, and the employees reaped the benefits. Edward's nerves felt frayed now as he watched the jet coming in. He wondered if Teabing's penchant for bribery had gotten him in trouble somehow. The French authorities seemed very intent on containing him. Edwards had not yet been told what the charges were, but they were obviously serious. At the French authorities' request, Kent police had ordered the Biggin Hill air traffic controller to radio the Hawker's pilot and order him directly to the terminal rather than the client's hangar. The pilot had agreed, apparently believing the far-fetched story of the gas leak. Now, 8 armed Kent policemen stood just inside the terminal building, awaiting the moment when the plane's engines powered down. The instant the plane had powered down, a runway attendant would place safety wedges under the tires so the plane could no longer move. Then the police would step into view and hold the occupants at bay until the French police arrived to handle the situation. The Hawker was low in the sky now, skimming the treetops to their right. Simon Edwards went downstairs to watch the landing from tarmac level. The Kent police were poised, just out of sight, and the maintenance man waited with his wedges. Out on the runway, the Hawker's nose tipped up, and the tires touched down in a puff of smoke. The plane settled in for deceleration, streaking from right to left in front of the terminal, its white hull glistening in the wet weather. But rather than braking and turning into the terminal, the jet coasted calmly past the access lane and continued on toward Teabing's hangar, in the distance. All the police spun and stared at Edwards.
"I thought you said the pilot agreed to come to the terminal."
Edwards was bewildered.
"He did."
Seconds later, Edwards found himself wedged in a squad car racing across the tarmac toward the distant hangar. The convoy of police was still a good 500 yards away as Teabing's Hawker taxied calmly into the private hangar and disappeared. When the cars finally arrived and skidded to a stop outside the gaping hangar door, the police poured out, guns drawn. Edwards jumped out too. The noise was deafening. The Hawker's engines were still roaring as the jet finished its usual rotation inside the hangar, positioning itself nose out in preparation for later departure. As the plane completed its 180-degree turn and rolled toward the front of the hangar, Edwards could see the pilot's face, which understandably looked surprised and fearful to see the barricade of police cars. The pilot brought the plane to a final stop and powered down the engine. The police streamed in, taking up positions around the jet. Edwards joined the Kent police captain, who moved warily toward the hatch. After several seconds, the fuselage door popped open. Lee Teabing appeared in the doorway as the plane's electronic stairs smoothly dropped down. As he gazed out at the sea of weapons aimed at him, he propped himself on his crutches and scratched his head.
"Simon, did I win the policeman's lottery while I was away?"
He sounded more bewildered than concerned. Simon Edwards stepped forward, swallowing the frog in his throat.
"Good morning, sir. I apologize for the confusion. We've had a gas leak and your pilot said he was coming to the terminal."
"Yes, yes. Well, I told him to come here instead. I'm late for an appointment. I pay for this hangar, and this rubbish about avoiding a gas leak sounded overcautious.
I'm afraid your arrival has taken us a bit off guard, sir.
I know, I'm off my schedule, I am. Between you and me, the new medication gives me the tinkles. Thought I'd come over for a tune-up.
The policemen all exchanged looks. Edwards winced.
Very good, sir.
Sir Teabing,
the Kent police captain said, stepping forward.
I need to ask you to stay on board for another half hour or so.
Teabing looked unamused as he hobbled down the stairs.
I'm afraid that is impossible. I have a medical appointment.
He reached the tarmac.
Quite literally, a matter of life and death.
The Kent captain repositioned himself to block Teabing's progress away from the plane.
I am here at the orders of the French Judicial Police. They claim you are transporting fugitives from the law on this plane.
Teabing stared at the captain a long moment, then burst out laughing.
Is this one of those hidden camera programs? Jolly good!
The captain never flinched.
This is serious, sir. The French police claim you may also have a hostage on board.
Teabing's manservant Remy appeared in the doorway at the top of the stairs.
I feel like a hostage working for Mr. Teabing, but he assures me I am free to go.
Remy checked his watch.
Master, we really are running late.
He nodded toward the Jaguar stretch limousine in the far corner of the hangar. The enormous automobile was ebony, with smoked glass and white-walled tires.
I'll bring the car.
Remy started down the stairs.
I'm afraid we cannot let you leave, the captain said. Please return to your aircraft, both of you. Representatives of the French police will be landing shortly.
Teabing looked now towards Simon Edwards.
Simon, for heaven's sake, this is ridiculous. We don't have anyone else on board, just the usual. Remy, our pilot, and myself. Perhaps you could act as an intermediary. Go have a look on board and verify that plane is empty.
Edwards knew he was trapped.
Yes, sir. I can have a look. The devil you will, the Kent captain declared,
apparently knowing enough about private airfields to understand that Simon Edwards might well lie about the plane's occupants in an effort to keep Teabing's business at Biggin Hill.
I will look myself.
Teabing shook his head.
No, you won't, Captain. This is private property, and until you have a search warrant, you will stay off my plane. I am offering you a reasonable option here. Mr. Edwards can perform the inspection.
No deal.
Teabing's demeanor turned frosty.
Captain, I'm afraid I don't have time to indulge in your games. I'm late, and I'm leaving. If it is that important to you to stop me, you'll just have to shoot me.
With that, Teabing and Remy walked around the captain and headed across the hangar toward the parked limousine. The Kent captain felt only distaste for Lee Teabing as the man hobbled around him in defiance. Men of privilege always felt like they were above the law.
They are not.
The captain turned and aimed at Teabing's back.
Stop, or we'll fire.
Go ahead, Teabing said without breaking stride or glancing back. My lawyers will fricassee your testicles for breakfast, and if you dare board my plane without a warrant, your spleen will follow.
No stranger to power plays, the police captain was unimpressed. Technically, Teabing was correct, and the police needed a warrant to board his jet. But because the flight had originated in France, and because the powerful Bézu Fasch had given his authority, the Kent captain felt certain his career would be far better served by finding out what it was on this plane that Teabing seemed so intent on hiding.
Stop them, the captain ordered. I'm searching the plane.
His men raced over, guns leveled, and physically blocked Teabing and his servant from reaching the limousine. Now Teabing turned.
Captain, this is your last warning. Do not even think of boarding that plane. You will regret it.
Ignoring the threat, the captain yanked out his sidearm and marched up the plane's gangway. Arriving at the hatch, he peered inside. After a moment, he stepped into the cabin.
What the devil?
With the exception of the frightened-looking pilot in the cockpit, the aircraft was empty, entirely devoid of human life. Quickly checking the bathroom, the chairs, and the luggage areas, the captain found no traces of anyone hiding, much less multiple individuals.
What the hell was Bézu Fasch thinking?
It seemed Lee Teabing had been telling the truth. The Kent captain stood alone in the deserted cabin and swallowed hard.
Shit!
His face flushed. He stepped back onto the gangway, gazing across the hangar at Sir Teabing and his servant, who were now under gunpoint near the limousine.
"Let them go," the captain ordered. "We got a bad tip."
Teabing's eyes were menacing, even across the hangar.
"You can expect a call from my lawyers, and for future reference, the French police cannot be trusted."
With that, Sir Teabing's manservant opened the door at the rear of the stretch limousine and helped his crippled master into the back seat. Then the servant walked the length of the car, climbed in behind the wheel, and gunned the engine. Policemen scattered as the Jaguar peeled out of the hangar.
"Well played, my good man,"
Teabing chimed from the rear seat as the limousine accelerated out of the airport. He turned his eyes now to the dimly lit front recesses of the spacious interior.
"Everyone comfy up there?"
Langdon gave a weak nod. He and Sophie were still crouched on the floor beside the bound and gagged albino. Moments earlier, as the Hawker taxied into the deserted hangar, Remy had popped the hatch as the plane jolted to a stop halfway through its turn. With the police closing fast, Langdon and Sophie dragged the monk down the gangway to ground level and out of sight behind the limousine. Then, the jet engines roared again, rotating the plane and completing its turn as the police cars came skidding into the hangar. Now, as the limousine raced toward Kent, Langdon and Sophie clambered toward the rear of the limo's long interior, leaving the monk bound in the front. They settled onto the long seat facing Teabing. The Brit gave them both a roguish smile and opened the cabinet on the limo's bar.
"Could I offer you a drink? Some nibblies, crisps, nuts, seltzer?"
Sophie and Langdon both shook their heads. Teabing grinned and closed the bar.
"So then, about this night's tomb.